Ukraine. That does it for our broadcast. We have a job opening at Democracy Now! We're hiring a development director to lead our fundraising efforts and on-air graphics operator as well. We're also accepting applications for our internship program. Find out more at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Today is Friday the 13th. Yay! I always love Friday the 13th. Friday the 13th, November 2015. It's always a lucky day for me. You know, it's completely, that superstition is completely bogus. All superstition is. It's not based on facts, you know, folks. It's just based on anecdotal evidence. And I think if you have a negative attitude going into the day or continuing into the day, something unfortunate might happen, actually, because you're not being as careful. You're spooked or something because of your own thoughts. Don't let that happen. It's a fine day every day if you make it so, or if you do what you can to make it so. My name is Jay Koronek, station advisor here at WHFR-FM. I'm joined in the studio, as we are usually, by our WHFR news director, John Conroy. Hi, John.
Yes.
Uh-oh, that's not the right mic. Try again.
Yes.
No. Okay, now.
Hi, Jay. How are you?
Yeah, that's the one. We have three to choose from here.
Yes.
So what are the odds?
Very good. Why?
No, they were bad odds. We got the must be Friday the 13th.
Well, I agree with your philosophy regarding the 13th.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Yeah.
It's also the day that my birthday falls on, so it's a good day.
Yeah, in past years, sometimes to make my point, I usually point out, like from Wikipedia or whatever, the history of Friday the 13th, how it got set up. And it's totally bogus. I mean, even though a couple of terrible things happened on Friday the 13th in history, there's a couple of terrible things happened every day in history. You know, it's just don't look for it. Don't waste your time. All right. As we put on the website, our special show today is featuring, for the first 32 minutes, in fact, a special interview that John and I just did about an hour ago with Dearborn Superintendent Glenn Maleko. And Glenn had to come to the station earlier because he's busy. He's a new superintendent, folks. And so here's a chance to listen to this interview, his first media interview at length anyway. And so here is Dr. Glenn Maleko of the Dearborn Public Schools. This is Jay Koronek, and along with John Conroy, we're here at WHFR pre-recording an interview with Dearborn Superintendent Glenn Maleko. And welcome to the new WHFR Journal show, Glenn. Glad to have you in the studios today.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today to speak to you.
Well, there's a lot of topics here, and I know you only have about 30 minutes. John Conroy was telling me that at least when you took over as superintendent back in July, you were using Fridays to get around the district a lot, to go and visit a lot of different schools. What, you're still on that sort of handshaking tour?
Sure, I'm still doing a lot of school visits. In fact, it's not just Friday, it's pretty much every day of the week. I was just in two schools prior to coming here. Mm-hmm. Today I had a great opportunity to come here to the Early College. That's a partnership with the college, and there's some great things happening over there. So that was another one of the days. I was at Whitmore Bowls earlier today, and part of our tours are just being visible and providing support to our teachers, our students, our parents throughout the district.
I thought it's important to let our listeners know who mostly are Dearborn residents, that you are the first superintendent in a long time in my memory, and I go back to being a Dearborn resident in 1979, who actually began as a Dearborn teacher and then moved through the system on up through principal jobs, and then most recently before the superintendent job, human resources. So that's 20 years, right?
Correct. Started, actually, I became a substitute teacher. October of 1995 is when I started. Mm-hmm. I was at University of Detroit Mercy working on my master's in teaching, and they were recruiting substitutes. I signed up and eventually did my student teaching over at Oakman Elementary and subbed for a couple of years and took some long-term assignments prior to getting... I ended up getting hired as a full-time teacher in 97 at Salina Elementary School.
Mm-hmm. I can only think it's a tremendous advantage that you have that background, that you have that knowledge about the school system and how it operates and who talks to whom from the lowest level, that is the teacher level. I guess the lowest level is the student level, but still. Where did you go to school yourself?
So I went to school. I actually grew up in Canada. I went to school over there, okay. But I came over, moved over for my graduate degree here. So I did my undergraduate at University of Windsor, then went on for my graduate studies at University of Detroit. I did 2 degrees there, including my leadership degree, and then finished my PhD off at Wayne State University. Well, so I've been around at different locations.
Since you brought it up, real quick, how are those Canadian schools at the lower levels since you went through them?
Great. I mean, you know, it's a similar system. It's a little different in that we do have larger school districts that are in Canada, but I think things are going well. It's a bit of a different, I think as far as research and the practices, the best practices we're implementing, you know, it's being implemented over there. They may have a little bit of a higher budget than is here in the state of Michigan, but, you know, things are going well. A size of a district like Dearborn with almost 20,000 students, would be the norm. Even larger districts over there, that would be some of the differences. They do it more on a provincial-wide basis. So.
Okay. I heard that, and it's somewhat true here at the college, too, is that internal candidates don't always have a favored status in terms of trying to get a higher-level job in the system.
Sure, I mean...
That doesn't make sense to me, first of all, but because of the extra background they have. But although some people say here, I know, is that... once they get to know you real well, they know an awful lot about you, pros and cons, and that more complete picture than a new candidate coming in, they're all bright and shiny. You know what I mean? They're just, the resume is all the good stuff. Mm-hmm. And so, and many times, of course, when you totally get to know someone after experience a couple of years, the picture sometimes changes. But, well, I just want to say congratulations.
Thank you.
It's great, number one, that a high-level administrator has a teacher background. I know my daughter in Southfield, they have very low teacher morale, not just because of budget cuts from the state, but also administrative things that have happened in Southfield, teacher layoffs going on, and teachers are not real happy with anything that's going on up there. And I'm sure it's a problem most places in the country because of budgets and I think the overemphasis on accountability, which is of course important, but you know, is there such a thing as too much testing, for example?
Sure. Yeah. That's a hot topic. And I would just first like to say on the teacher side, you know, I appreciate our teaching, our faculty. You know, we have almost 1,300 teachers, and that's one thing I can empathize with them in their situation. I do have an understanding, and I do value their worth because, really, we're here for the students. All of us in the district, I'm here to serve the students. But the bottom line is that the greatest impact on a student is going to be that teacher in the classroom, and that's why we really want to invest and we value our teaching faculty. And one of the other things, as you mentioned, I had experience so in the hiring and recruitment. So I take that very seriously as well, and making sure that we hire high quality. We've been one of the districts that has been fortunate enough to been growing enrollment despite a lot of budget cuts that have occurred across the state. Mm-hmm. At least our enrollment has been very stable, which has kept us in a great shape as a school district. And so, you know, we've been looking at hiring the last 5 years since I was in human resources, now superintendent, close to 100 to 120 teachers every year for the last 5 years.
I didn't know that, and that's strange. I don't know. It didn't get reported that much in the paper. Usually the paper makes a big deal about the number of teachers that get the so-called pink slips in the spring. Sometimes there's a necessity to at least notify teachers that they might not be hired back, but usually once the state figures out their budget, it usually things change by fall, and most of those teachers are hopefully not fired each year, but we've been hiring.
And that is a big change that occurred 3 years ago. There was legislation, it was positive, that changed the evaluation protocol, and it was called prohibitive subjects of bargaining on layoff recall, that it's now policy. So seniority isn't the main factor in layoff and recall. So some you could look at it. But one thing I would tell you is you are accurate. For several years, we would have to, because of some of the language in the contract, we'd be laying off 60 to 100 teachers a year. This was going back to when I was a principal.
Right.
And then you'd call many of them back, depending on the budget. The last few years, last year, we laid off one teacher because of a specialized area. Years prior to that, it was maybe two or three. And the reason is because we changed our process as well. We were able to enhance that. And so that's a benefit, I think, as well. And it gives some stability to families. You know, they get laid off and then they lose benefits over the summer. And this way, you know, so the process has, I think, and that's one positive legislation. The other thing is we work collaboratively with our union group. We've had a great relationship, and they have a seat at the table to help us develop our process. And even though the legislation says that we can just create the policy, have the board approve but we don't operate that. We believe in collaboration, and that's a better way to go about things and get their input, and we have a better product, a better model for that.
Apparently my daughter's building in Southfield. Sorry, that's my experience, my connection. Because we blame Southfield. I don't have to blame Dearborn because I don't have it in directly at the lower levels of Dearborn. But she believes it's just their principal who decides who's going to not come back the next year. It's whether or not he likes them. Now, there are some criteria out there, and I know the teacher evaluation criteria have changed. I think there was a recent ruling by the state, but so there isn't as much emphasis on
the student growth measurement.
Student growth measurement.
It went from 50 to 20.
At least for the next couple of years. I think it might flip-flop back. But I always wonder, what do they know about education? Yes, they might have gone to school somewhere in the distant past, but it's just my personal opinion that I don't believe they're the ones that really should legislate on that, unless perhaps it comes from our Michigan State Board of Ed and they're advisors, but they're not really policy makers or in control of budgets, are they?
No, they don't have the budget control. We are thankful we have our former superintendent from Dearborn, Mr. Whiston, who has great understanding, a state superintendent.
Yeah.
But again, some of his authority is limited because of those reasons you mentioned. The legislature sets that out. I will tell you that I did support the recent legislation.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the I think it was a positive overall. And in Dearborn, we have a fair model. We have a very fair model with checks and balances. We're implementing a research-based framework for evaluation. We've actually been looked at and we've presented on a state, and I'm still going to be presenting with Mr. Whiston at a national conference before superintendents on our model.
Mm-hmm.
So we've really been ahead of the game. We're all about fairness. So what you mentioned about the school, if someone does, well, that cannot happen in Dearborn. There's checks and balances, and I've been heavily involved in that, developing that process. I would tell you a weakness from the state was putting the student growth measurement. When they implemented that, legislated that in 2011, there was no system in place, which connects to your assessment question. We really have a weak assessment system, and it really has kind of gotten out of control. So in fairness to teachers and educators, some of the research says, you know, you really shouldn't be tying evaluations to achievement per se. So we need some work there. That's why I'm glad that they went from 50% to 25% and giving some phase in time, because even 25%, there's really not a consistent and fair system in place that even measure students' growth that helps that individual student right now.
And there's so many aspects to student growth, too. It's
correct.
Not just how well you do on a math test. That's easy to compute, you know, whether or not they get if their problems, did they solve them correctly? Did they get the addition to the proper sum? I think it's also, and it's true certainly in my 40 years of teaching here, it's something that's very hard to judge, but a lot of the students I see that have been really successful, it's somehow they were inspired, they were motivated by the experience. And in some cases, I'm quite puzzled because I didn't give them the highest grades. I mean, they passed, the ones that I'm thinking of, but they said, no, I just never forgot that classroom experience. And Sometimes they mention me, but, you know, the kinds of curriculum we had and the challenges we had for them. And that's really deep-set educational growth, because it's a growth in their own curiosity and confidence in their own skills. Sure. And to make decisions for themselves, too, and move ahead. So that's so hard to analyze, to quantify.
Because it's the relationship you're talking about, mm-hmm. that you made a difference in the life of a student. Yeah. The student doesn't necessarily remember that specific content or that test score. They'll remember the positive impact that you've had on them with a teacher. I run into, which is, you know, I've been here 20 years now, so I do run into my former students that are now gone off their teachers, their doctors. They're, mm-hmm. It's quite rewarding to see their success. And they don't remember that specific curriculum. They might, but they remember that we respected them as students, and we wanted them to succeed, and we cared for them. And you cannot necessarily measure that. The other thing they always remember, I'm a huge Red Wings fan, so they always bring that up, but that's a relationship piece too that we had, you know, yeah. some personable, but
right.
that comes up even on my social media. I get texts every now and then about
the teacher has to be an authority figure and has to be recognized for that, but they also have to be recognized as a human being who's relating to the situation in the world today, and in the yeah. local situation too. It's, you've got to keep up on a lot of things. What would you say the biggest challenges are? At the very top, you're concerned about budget
sure.
and funding coming in, and of course how it's spent going out. You mentioned earlier that to me before we started the recording here, that at one point the Dearborn School's budget was $230 million a year, somewhere there, and now it's $108 million?
Or $184 million.
$184 million.
Okay,
so $50 million.
Left. Yeah, and there's different ways, you know, when you hear the reports of, well, this legislature's increased in funding per pupil allowance, or they've decreased. The problem with that is there's multiple things that go into funding a school. Anybody can say, oh, look, we've gained or we haven't lost. But the reality is this. I was sitting at a table with former Superintendent Whiston and Dr. Artis, who was the superintendent before that 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. And he said, look, we had a $230 million operational general fund budget with less students mm-hmm. at the time 8 years ago. Now we're $184 million. So politicians, political groups can play the game of this fund or that fund. But the reality is, look at our full fund and look at what it is now versus what it was 8 years ago. And it shows we've had to reduce dramatically, including 1 year over $20 million halfway through the year. So again, we understand there were some tough economic times. We're fiscally responsible. But the reality is that we do not have the same amount of resources as we did a decade ago.
What's the, and I guess it would vary in each level, what's the average number of students per classroom?
Well, that it varies between the elementary and high school, but generally that's another area that we've protected is class size. We're about a 24 average at elementary school.
Oh,
we
wow.
get closer
That's
to
great.
30 at the high school. But part of the reasons we've been able to do that with the budget cuts is, and I'm going to speak to our employees. Our employees have taken concessions over the last several years for benefits and pay, and so we haven't laid off as many employees. Had we done that, we would have had higher class size. In some districts,
right.
they've taken a different route when they've negotiated contracts. And so, I will commend our employees that it has hit in their pocketbooks, and we aren't necessarily always getting the same amount of wages. Especially, I am concerned with new teacher pay. I do see a shortage coming up in the next 5 years, not just in Dearborn, but in the mm-hmm. state. Mm-hmm. And I think that, supply and demand comes down to economics and what professions. I would encourage people to get into teaching, but I also understand that at some point we're going to have to raise the entry-level teaching wages to be competitive.
Mm-hmm. And that's competitive with whom or what?
Well, really with other careers.
Okay.
With other careers. It means that potential teachers may choose other professions rather than teaching, because if they come out with a four-year degree with student loans. Now, we do know that Henry Ford College, for example, has a great opportunity in a partnership with us where they can have 2 years. They could then take those 2 years to a college and get a teaching degree, and we're working with the college. So that's a way to save money. It's a great program for the community.
Is.
But the reality is that there's still student loans and other things. So when you come out of that and you're not making the wages you maybe you would before, it takes you 18 years to get to the higher end of the wage versus what it may have been 10 years in previous years, and you do not have the same retirement benefits and other things, it's a supply and demand. They are choosing other professions. I would still advocate to go into teaching, but the reality is it is still economics, and you want to have money that you can, you know, support your family.
And of course, there is that feeling out there, unfortunately, still, that the teachers are somewhat vilified, that the problem of education is bad teachers, and the teachers, therefore, are being overpaid. I mean, these are all, I don't know where these ideas come from. It's easy just to pick a scapegoat and toss blame as a excuse, really, to be like a legislative hero by cutting money somewhere. Mm-hmm. I don't think teachers are overpaid. They've got all those benefits and they got the big pension plans. I think the pension is after, you know, if you're a good teacher, you would like to know that you've got a safe retirement ahead of you, you know, that you've got that cushion there. I think that's one reason a lot of people go into teaching. Actually, well, I started at Henry Ford College in 68, and I retired in 2008. 40 years in one place. Mm-hmm. That doesn't
that's
happen
great.
Anymore. But that's kind of a
days.
Job security, and it's also, it allows you to do a lot more things with your life to focus on, instead of job hunting every 2 years, it allows you to improve yourself in that job and work on making yourself a better person, raising your family in the best possible way if you don't have to move around all that much or have all that instability. Now, that's something that's extremely important, I think, for a lot of people to choose teaching because, at least in my case, that's the way it used to be. Again, with low morale, a lot of teachers may decide to try to go to something that they think is going to be more lucrative or at least where they don't hear these slings and arrows from certain politicians about they're not doing their job or they're being overpaid or something.
Well, and I could tell you, too, with the, on that discussion about, you know, fire the teachers or whatever, first and foremost, I will say with our evaluation system, we've held our staff accountable. We do it in a positive method, but when we try to get people to improve, but when it doesn't, we've made tough decisions on staff. So we're not just going to keep staff around. But having said that, we have to have a fairness within that process. But the solution of it has to be greater than just the teachers and blaming the teachers. It has to be one of how are we going to really make improvements. Some of that does come to funding, but it also comes to tightening our process. So we take a process that we have is our school improvement that we're very pleased with. And that, what is that about? That's about getting in the classes and changing the inputs or the quality of instruction. And I can tell you, I've been on the school improvement committee. We have a lot of parents that serve on the committee.
Okay.
We have a lot of teachers.
I was going to say, who's on the committee? Yeah.
We have principals. And what we actually do is we go through every school. We have 32 buildings, and we go and we evaluate every single class at least twice a year, go into every class, and we document the positives that are going on. We share in the knowledge. And so in this case, we're actually able to share in positive instructional practices that teachers use. And I've seen I've been on this committee for 9 years. It started in 2006. I've seen dramatic improvements in our school district. I really have. Not to say that we still have room for improvement, but we're implementing a more consistent process throughout that helps our children.
The bare bones of the teacher evaluation program in many districts, I'm sure, is just like the principal goes around and sits in on classes as one person. And the problem I have with that is that they're not necessarily content experts in most of those teachers' areas. So they can't give the positive feedback about curriculum design or whatever. And it seems like with a larger evaluation team, if you will, the improvement committees, that can happen. That's more positive here.
It is, and we have teachers that sit on those committees, and they go through the classes.
Yeah.
And part of that, too, is they go to different schools. So then they learn in the positive practices, and we share in the knowledge. So it's really meant for a positive. But I mean, there is a form of accountability to make sure our students are learning.
Mm-hmm. One of the first stages of evaluation here at Henry Ford College, and it's certainly sort of different than the K-12 in terms of rules and guidelines for accountability, but our teacher union is actually a big part of that first stage of evaluations, and that means the teachers in each departmental and division area are responsible for collecting and analyzing the information we get from students and other sources, and then trying to help the teachers directly you know, first line of defense is the teachers helping the teachers. Sure. But certainly if there's a problem area, we've got to get help for those people. And usually it's a little easier to do when they know that their colleagues are right there with them. Mm-hmm. It's, as you said, it's got to be a positive evaluation experience, yeah. Focused on change and growth, mm-hmm. And so on. John, I know you had a couple of questions. Go ahead. I'll let you pick one.
Okay.
We're about 20 minutes into our 30-minute interview with Glenn Maleko, who is the new superintendent of Dearborn Public Schools.
Thank you, Jay. Glenn, I was also thinking about personal experiences with my early teachers. And I grew up on the East Coast in New York and Connecticut. Mm-hmm. And the teachers that I'll never forget are my kindergarten, first grade mm-hmm. teachers that got you first enthusiastic sure. about the subject mm-hmm. and reading in general. I guess the question is, how have you seen that in your tenure of superintendent, of the enthusiasm of the kids and the teachers?
Yeah, I see a great enthusiasm. I think most of us had gotten into it for that idealistic that we want to make a difference. And I'll be honest, I was going into law school. I was going to head to law school, and I was coaching hockey and changed and decided, you know what, I really wanted to work with students to make a difference. So, again, one of the most rewarding things for me is to hear from my former students and their successes, whether that might be students that I had when I was a elementary principal that are now in high school and doing well and are going off to college, or students that are currently in, have a nice profession, they have a family. It's really rewarding to see when they come back and say thank you to you, and that was based on some of those relationships. And I think that idealistic principle still holds for the majority of our faculty in the school district. And you know, I'm a positive optimist, and that's the way I always look at things. I will never see that glass half empty. I just can't. I'm always going to see it. So where I see problems, I'm talking about the budget problems. I also see opportunities for change, mm-hmm. In how we can do things a little bit more efficiently and effective. So that, to me, that's important. Though it has to. When I was applying for the job, one of the things I made clear is that I'm about the students. And every decision that I make, I'll come back to what is in the best interest of the children. And that comes with those relationships the teachers have with the students.
Well, then, and when you were in Canada going through school systems there, how much different are they compared to what your experiences are here?
I mean, I would tell you it's similar as far as the instruction techniques and the research. I mean, Canada and the U.S. have partnered in a lot of ways. Maybe the bigger changes are more on a broader level of the legislatures and the decisions that are made holistically. We did not have as many smaller school districts like we do in Michigan, and it's a little more the funding source is a little different. But as far as the teachers in the classroom, similarities to, you know, they're there for the idealistic principle. They want to make a difference. And like you, I remember the ones that I had a good relationship with and really kind of looked out for me. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily remember that specific content class or that test score I got, but I do remember the teacher in physics that, you know, took extra time to provide me with support so that I was successful, or the teacher that was also a coach that, you know, motivated me, and I ended up doing well in the hockey as well. And those are the teachers that I remember.
Okay. And also with the testing, I grew up in a system where SATs were much more important than ACTs were. Mm-hmm. And you said that focus is changing as well.
So, yeah, the state has implemented a change. They've implemented a lot of changes, and there are some issues now with the assessment system in the state, and we've been talking about it at the board meetings, and we're advocating, and I know the Superintendent Whiston is aware of it, but we're now going to the SAT for high school. It's going to be starting in the spring, and it's a switch from the ACT.
Right.
And so what we have to do is we're going to be looking at maybe some course sequencing adjustments and just preparation adjustments to help our students, but we believe that this test hopefully will be around for many years, and the state will not go ahead and change it. You know, they've been changing things on us quite frequently.
Okay.
In the last couple of minutes, we have some quickie answers. Just update us on the status of the K-12 administrative building there on 10 Ike. is going to be sold, is going to be repaired. I think the last I read was that you're exploring the actual cost of doing the repairs, but you have the money, technically, or you should have the money from the last bond issue.
Yeah, there's money is available to, you know, it needs a new roof and a parking lot. So there is some maintenance that if we're going to remain there. The board has given myself and administration the direction to study that and look to stay within that building. With some potential renovations and making that building possibly a little more user-friendly, customer service-friendly. It was initially built as a school, so some of the structures are not built as a central office administration. So we're looking at doing that. All of our technology routes into that location. So from a fiscally responsible manner, it makes more sense money-wise to stay at that location.
Rather than, for example, lease space in the Dearborn Administrative Center where City Hall is now in Dearborn?
Correct. At this point, we have decided that we're going to pursue more of our location. It doesn't mean that options wouldn't be open to the Board of Education in the future, but that would really be a board decision that I would provide recommendations to. But just right now, you know, we want to be responsible with the taxpayers, and we feel that any kind of move would be a major cost to the technology end in the short term. That doesn't mean that you couldn't look at other options in the long term. And I have spoken to the mayor directly about, you know, this possibility. It's just right now it makes sense for us to do what we're doing right now and study our current building.
You mentioned technology, and I know that it's an essential part appropriately used in education these days in all kinds of different ways. How's that paper-free thing going?
Sure. So that's one thing. It's not paper three, but it's a reduction. And I believe heavily in communication and customer service. So one of my non-negotiables is customer service, and that means putting out blogs. I lead by example with superintendent blog. I'm very transparent. I have my goals on the blog. I have everything you'll see updates. Individual users can go to it's superintendent.dearbornschools.org, and they can register to get an update via email when I put out a new post. Yeah. All of our staff will also be doing that. We're going to have all school blogs completed by December, and it's to communicate with parents. Then by February, we're going to have teacher level blogs. Most of them are already created and out there, and we've been doing it for several years, but we're doing it consistently. Okay. My blog is not as important as the teacher blog. The teacher blog is most important because the teacher is providing information on what's going on in the class to help the student with their parents. We're getting great feedback on that. We are also, so that's one reason it's community. The other reason is just green schools and trying to be responsible that way. And so the board is going to lead by example by, for example, eliminating paper at Board of Education meetings starting in January. And most of our communications will go out electronically versus paper.
In the olden days, when they thought everything, this is like 30 years ago, when they thought that paper would be really not essential at all because of computers coming in, they realize that computers don't always function very well. They need the backup on paper for everything. But in fact, these days you can back up in a variety of digital media that are fairly secure, like solid state drives of one sort or another, fairly secure. Although you still want to backup, because strange things happen. We're pretty much computer-based here at WHFR in terms of music files and the other work that we do. And I just got an email this morning that several folders are missing from certain computers. Oh, okay. And they're asking, did I back them up? Well, I sure hope I did. But there are some things that there's so much information there that you can't really back it all up on paper. I mean, it would take several storehouses to put everything in paper. And, of course, music you can't put on paper. So, I mean, the sheet music, but not the performances. And thank you so much. This is Superintendent Glenn Maleko that we've been talking to here on a special pre-recorded segment of the new WHFR Journal today. Thanks so much for being with us, and we hope to have you back well, maybe at least once a year to give us updates or send whoever you want to us if they've got a special story. Glad to spread the word. I know Dave Musson has got me in his Rolodex over there.
Okay.
And I get all the emails he sends about everything happening that is going out. But is there one or a couple of key things that you think that parents and residents in general in Dearborn can do to help the mission of the schools?
Yeah, I mean, I think just getting involved, like I said, we have the school improvement plan in the process. They could get involved in that. They can get involved in PTAs. They can get involved in, we have a program called Watch. The dads do this Watch program in many of the schools. And so we encourage parents to be involved in the schools. I think the collaboration is very important. And one of the things that we want to do is communicate with parents. We want parents to feel welcome. We're here to serve their children. So we welcome parents. We want parents to be involved not only in the elementary school, but also middle and high school, because a lot of times there's a kind of a drop-off of involvement by the parents as they go higher into the level. And we're saying, no, we think it's important to have parents involved even at the higher levels. So they can contact their local PTA, or their PTAs. They can contact their school. We have a lot of parents that volunteer, those that maybe have the ability mm-hmm. to. They mm-hmm. volunteer in the classroom. Yeah. And we welcome that, and we appreciate that.
Or at lunchtime or
lunchtime,
whatever.
Yeah, sure, sure.
Whatever's good.
Visibility.
And they could find out that by just contacting the principal of the school, the principal's sure. office. They would know about, like, PTA meetings
sure.
and,
yes.
and so on.
And it would be on the school websites as well.
On the school website.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I do know that the DearbornSchools.org, that's the main yes. website, is got lots of information there. It's almost an overload, I have to say,
yeah.
when looking at it, because there's all kinds of menus and different mm-hmm. information. And, of course, you try to get as much on the front page, the home page, supposedly, as you can. But that, you know, since there's so many schools, 35 school buildings?
Well, 35 buildings, but buildings. 32 schools.
Only 30 school,
yeah.
two schools.
Yeah.
And all the administrators and all the different activities and needs of each area. It's a whole big process, and I'm glad you volunteered to be at the top. You've got a constant challenge. Thank you for your time today, and we'll look forward to helping you with any initiatives in the future.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be on the show today, and I appreciate your hospitality, and it's great to have a dialogue here at the college.
And I want to say thank you to Dawn as well.
Oh,
she
okay.
was very
oh, okay. I'll make sure she knows.
Smoothing the process
okay.
out. Okay. Get you over
great.
Here.
Yeah, what would I do without her? She keeps everything going.
You're personal assistant, secretary,
yes,
whatever.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Credit to everybody at the Dearborn Public Schools for keeping things on track. And apparently, from what I know now, better than Southfield. So
okay.
congratulations.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate it.
You're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves right from Henry Ford College with Jay Kornick and John Conroy here with you. That was... It is, of course, today is November 13th, 2015, and that was recorded just about an hour or so before the show right here in our WHFR studios with Superintendent Glenn Maleko. And we do thank him for coming by, and we'll keep in touch. Again, it's always good from some of the newspaper stories, some of the things I say on the air are sometimes a little bit off track, and it's always good to get the word directly from the source, as they say.
Yes.
Of course, opinions expressed in the show are not necessarily those of anyone at Henry Ford College, but we thank them for the opportunity to speak them. So, John, we've got a lot of stories and about 26 minutes left in the hour to cover. You want to begin?
Got well, some lots stuff? Of good stuff, Jay.
Okay.
You bet.
Oh, let me
well,
do
go
these.
Ahead.
Well, these are two follow-ups. Often stories mention something, and they're very rarely are there any follow-ups as to what really did happen after all, or why did that person die, or... You know, they say, well, the police are still investigating, and we never find out what they found out, you know? So I guess because it's old news. First is the Bablo boat, because that's the oldest thing. 105-year-old boat, one of the two that took people to Bablo Island in the olden days, a couple decades ago. And this one, the other one has been bought and taken into... the Hudson River Valley, New York State, and is undergoing restoration to be used as a boat there. The other one is the SS St. Clair, and it was now moved. They found a new location to moor it at while they're trying to raise the rest of the money for restoration. And I guess you could see it from a distance. It's now sits at a dock near the intersection of Dix Avenue and Dearborn Road. In Detroit, they're still trying to raise money for the restoration. The current owners have owned it since 2007, and there's a picture on the front page of the Dearborn Times Herald from this week of the SS St. Clair, and it looks like it's in really bad shape. I mean, there's deck railings that are collapsed, and it's going to take a lot of money, but I can't see the point of keeping it sitting around already 8 years, and they don't have enough money raised even for the first stage of renovation. So I don't know. But good luck to them, because it was a great heritage, and we do have a nice lake area. It would be nice to take trips up and down to see the shoreline, and even though there is no Bablo Island anymore, I think that could be very valuable. They're still in of course, it's a much longer trip, but in the olden days, remember, my parents used to take boats similar to this, if not this boat, and they would go all the way to Put-in Bay in northern Ohio. Because they had a small picnic amusement park area, and then, of course, Cedar Point, a further trip still, but they actually had boats that went from Detroit all the way down there, too. Although I remember that Bablo was at least an hour ride. Of course, they didn't go very fast.
No.
Did you go on some of those, John?
I've been to Bablo. Yes, we took the kids there a number of times, and Put-in Bay is quite the party place, too.
They've developed it even more, especially for, of course, people with their private boats, but you can drive to it, just like the Cedar Point, you can drive there. Okay. Well, just to give you an update on that, it has been saved temporarily by being moved to a new location in the River Rouge after it's moved from E-Course dock. And the VFW hall in the Donovan VFW post on Van Bourne Road, since a robbery last year, they were left penniless, and their power has been cut, and they've had to turn away potential paying customers who want to rent the facility. They started a GoFundMe account, as we mentioned, and it hasn't raised, it's only raised about half of the $5,000 that they need. And they did get a restaurant in Taylor, the Matador restaurant, to have a day to donate a portion of their proceeds, and I think it's a Mexican restaurant. But, of course, it came out in the paper on Wednesday the 11th, and that was the day of the event. John, you found some other event also that was in a paper and happening on that very same day.
Right. That was the book signing event for the Dearborn native that wrote the book.
Right, yeah. And although we can mention his name later, but I'm just saying, as I've said for many years now, Press and Guide and Times Herald editors, if you're listening, would you please take a note? If the event is happening on the day your paper comes out, that's too late for you to put the story in. Because, I'm sorry, most people don't read it on the day they get it. You think people read it when they get it on Sunday or Saturday? They get weekends. You know, they probably don't read it till Monday. And people get it on Wednesday. Sometimes they don't read that paper until the weekend. Believe me, this is a fact. Don't you ever take any surveys on this? So you must get those stories if they get them in advance. And maybe it's the fault of some of the publicists. They send them to them at the last minute. But if you get it in time, it should go the week before, not the day the paper comes out. Because that's not a big help to these not usually struggling nonprofits, is what I'm mainly concerned about, that such as the Donovan VFW Hall. The book signing is a for-profit thing, but still, it would have been nice to support a Dearborn residence as author if you could get out to Ann Arbor for that one.
Sure.
You know. Okay, moving on. Should we do the cultural stuff and go down the list?
Well, let's start with our events.
Well, in Dearborn, the Dearborn Symphony is at it again tonight. It's their November concert. November 13th is today at the Ford Community Performing Arts Center. It is Hits from the Silver Screen. Mm-hmm. And I mistakenly, in talking about it, not on the air, but to somebody last week, I said Hits from the Silent Screen. Well, if it's silent, there's no music except played in the auditorium by some organist, you know, but it's not related to the movie in every theater the same way in those days. So, no, this is the Silver Screen, and it says here they have a guest conductor, Leif Bajlan, who's conducted Dearborn Symphony. They're going to perform music from 2001 A Space Odyssey, Star Wars Episode 5, which is The Empire Strikes Back, American in Paris, Gone with the Wind, Psycho, West Side Story, and many more. It's always one of the more popular concerts of each year, and sometimes referred to as classical pop music, in fact. And that does start tonight at 8 o'clock, and it should be a very big, exciting thing. I'm not sure if they have already sold out. They have a special dinner opportunity at 6 p.m. in the atrium of Dearborn's 19th District Court. So you can go to court And instead of having to pay a traffic ticket, you have to pay for a ticket to eat dinner. Dinner is at $85 per person, in addition to your ticket to go see the listen to the music. But it's for the good cause of the Dearborn Symphony itself. As I said before, and we mentioned to you, selling tickets alone doesn't pay for all their cost of keeping the symphony going. Yeah, so you need to support them in some other way each year at one of their special benefits, or this restaurant deal tonight. And you can call, you can go to dearbornsymphony.org or call their number. They usually have someone in the office until about 2 o'clock on Fridays, 313-565-2424. That's 313-565-2424. You can check on whether or not the dinner tickets are still available. Maybe they can advise you about the tickets for the actual performance tonight, too. The tickets range from $10 to $30. And, of course, they're also at dearbornsymphony.org, where you can purchase them. Or you can call the Dearborn Symphony office, as I just said, the number 313-562-2424. Should be a lot of fun. A lot of people, especially, like music from the silver screen performances.
And Jay, speaking of good things to eat, we have our 5101 holiday buffet this coming Wednesday, 11/18. Not only is there dinner from 6 to 8, but there'll be a special brunch from 10:30 to 1. $17 per person. Beer and wine will be available for purchase after 5 p.m. And a great-looking buffet, as all their buffets are. We've attended many of those buffets.
Yes, we have.
We can attest to their great servings and great service.
Yeah, it'll be something very special. We just got the notice here about it, although I do see that we have one of their little cards from the beginning of the semester that does indicate the holiday buffet on the 18th, but that mistakenly says $16 a person, and here it says $17 a person. See how prices are going up? Who said there's no inflation?
Right.
Beer and wine will be available for purchase after 5 p.m., by the way. We do have a liquor license for beer and wine. Okay.
The West Side Theater Project is happening. It's the last weekend for that show, The Last Romance, at the Valentine Auditorium at Dearborn High School, 19501 Outer Drive. And this is a fundraiser for the Dearborn High School Theater Program. It'll be at 8 p.m. tonight and tomorrow night and 3 p.m. Sunday. It's billed as a romantic comedy among folks in the golden years.
Mm-hmm. But I'm sure appropriate for all ages. And might even be a family affair. You could learn something. But this is a very professional group of local actors, repertory actors, being directed by Diane Burnick, who has directed many fine local productions. And as we said, it's a fundraiser for Dearborn High School, but it's not starring Dearborn High School students at this point. It's other folks from the community, from other repertory companies. So it should be great. Maybe you'd want to attend that and help support Dearborn Theater at Dearborn High School.
And it's $15 general admission, $13 for seniors and students. And for seats, call 313-827-1647.
Well, as we're on cultural entertainment things, Joe's Top Dog tonight, John?
Yes, Joe's Top Dog tonight features the Rich Michaels Trio. And they have the guest performer there tonight is Barbara Ware, who is a very, very fine singer. Mm-hmm. And they will be open at right around 6:30 till about 9:30 for that performance, that group and that singing performance.
Okay. So it's an early evening. You could still have a big time after that's done. Go out somewhere else if you are into that later. But I think that early evening idea is a very good idea. Because many people might want to do two things each evening, but they might want to start with that. Let me flip-flop Bob back to last Saturday night. Thank you to everybody that attended our WHFR Blues benefit. It was extremely successful, standing room only for the first 3 hours, and a solid core of about 40 people stayed all the way until after 1 o'clock in the morning. We want to thank Joanne Korchinska, our WHFR Blues Director, for planning that and being there as a key host for us and for the performances. We thank the owner of the Whiskey Bar there on Warren for his support for WHFR for that event. Just like with the Dearborn Symphony, we have to do benefits for ourselves almost every month, one way or the other. I think we're taking December off so we can rest but and celebrate the holidays. But there's all kinds of things that nonprofits, including the Dearborn Animal Shelter, have to do around the year, and we need support, you know, from almost everybody at one time or another. But at least I just wanted to say it was a great event. Thank you, Joanne. Thank you to Patrick, the owner, and thank you to all of you, including us, a good number of people from Henry Ford College, faculty, administration, who also showed up. It was great evening, and great to party together.
Yes, it was. And of course, Jay and Laura, you guys put in an amazing amount of hours for that event as well. Thank you very much.
Sure. Laura Rousset, our operations manager. Yep, absolutely true. Okay, Global Fridays for this November is actually next Friday, November 20th, but just so you can plan ahead, unlike the newspapers giving it to you at the last minute, they're having their... well, really, it's usually world music, people from famous around the world. This is Armenian folk music. It's going to be next Friday, November 20th. General admission, $15. Concerts begin at 8 p.m. Artists usually have a talk earlier. I'm not sure that'll be happening this time. You can check their website, ArabAmericanMuseum.org, or give them a call. The Armenian folk artists are Ara Tapuzian and Mal Barsamian, performing together, I believe, as a duo. Just very, very high quality performances from people from around the world, right here in Dearborn at the Arab American National Museum. Again, their website, ArabAmericanMuseum.org. What else is happening around here, John?
All right. Yes, we have a program happening tomorrow at the Ray Hunter Florist and Garden Center on Eureka Road, 16153 Eureka Road in Southgate. This is called Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree, and it's an event to benefit youth programs at the Downriver Council for the Arts, the Downriver Family Y, MCA, and the Rotary Club of Southgate. Hmm. Wander among the Christmas trees and decorations from 6 to 9, on Saturday, November 15th. There'll be photos with Santa and caroling and music.
Wait, there's a problem.
Yep.
Tomorrow's the 14th.
Tomorrow's the 14th. Yes, tomorrow is the...
Well, you just said the 15th.
Oh, I meant to say the 14th.
Okay, so it says the 14th in the story.
It does.
Okay, sometimes there's typos there. I just want to double check. All right.
Saturday.
So it is tomorrow at Ray Hunter Florist, and that's in...
Southgate.
Southgate, yes.
Yep. On Eureka Road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Lots of music from the Sarah Sherrard Band and performances by the Open Book Theater Company and Wyandotte Community Theater will be part of the
goodness.
Festive fun. Yes.
Big part. What time?
That is 6 to 9 p.m.
Okay. Big evening time. Okay. And we should mention the cost. It's for a good cause, nonprofit, but
right.
What's the cost?
Tickets are $40 per person.
Okay. It's a special event, yes, but a lot of things happening. And I bet they got a few flowers decorating around the area there.
Well, and it is a beautiful way. They set that whole area up beautifully.
Yeah, I know that they do a Santa Claus thing after Thanksgiving, that they have a special decorations, and I think that's free to get into, but I'm just saying, you know, trying to make money eventually, but anyway, but that's a nice event, special event, a little extra money, but you're helping to support some good causes there downriver. Okay, I've got a couple of quickie stories here. This is kind of like an event you can attend. Stop the Crisis, What is the Pathway to Peace in the Middle East? It's a special presentation from Muslims for Peace organization. Some people don't think that's possible, but it is possible. It's a group, Muslims for Peace, and I'm all in favor of peace. At any point in time, it could start everywhere. It's fine with me, okay? Imagine, as John Lennon said, if there was peace everywhere right now, what we'd spend our time doing, what things we could achieve of positive nature for everyone, and all the money we wouldn't have to waste killing other people like ourselves. And the destruction of our environment, we could turn the whole world around if we just were at peace. But in any event, that's a special evening presentation here on campus, Henry Ford College, The Rosenau Conference Room inside our administration building, that is the ASCC building on the main campus of Henry Ford College, Evergreen Road. Complimentary refreshments, too, but it is free to everyone who would like to attend. For more information, again, go to the website muslimsforpeace.org. Okay, and Festival of Trees is going to be opening a week from Sunday here. If you're familiar with it, it's a special benefit for Children's Hospital of Michigan Foundation. And it's very pretty. A lot of nonprofits, WHFR did this one year, a couple of years back, decorating a big Christmas tree in unique ways. And then they sell the trees to people who want them. And you can buy other things, too. It's a little Christmas expo there, too, at the same time.
Like a boutique type
of program. Yeah, and there's a charge to get in, and it's usually a big family thing to do for a week or two. But it starts November 22nd, and there's a preview party on November 21st. The 31st Annual Festival of Trees, starting to the public on the 2 p.m. November 22nd, and only runs for 7 days. It runs through November 29th over the Thanksgiving holidays there. It is closed Thanksgiving, by the way. Yeah. Okay. Coming up at 2 o'clock is Highway 61 today, featuring Kitty Love returning to the airwaves while Joanne Korchinska takes some needed time off. And after that big blowout last Saturday, boy, she knows how to party, let me tell you. And I may slide in for some Zydeco later this afternoon, too.
Oh, yeah.
Few people seem to enjoy that. Here's something with all the politics going on. I need to mention about the primary here in Michigan. It's still three and a half months away. It's going to happen on Tuesday, March the 8th. Okay. It is Democrat and Republican parties only. Some of you might out there may not know that there are other political parties. Yes, the third largest party in the U.S. is the Libertarian Party, and the fourth largest is the Green Party. The one that's in favor of what? That's right, saving the world, saving the environment. And isn't it amazing that the Dems and Republicans haven't been able to get on that track, you know? So they can, I mean, they could undercut the Green Party by just being totally in favor of saving the environment and peace. But since they're not, we need a Green Party, and maybe somebody should vote for them. Well, anyway, back to the primary. The primary right now has, 14 Republicans? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 9, 10, 11, 12, 14 Republicans, and of course some of them might drop out by March. If they drop out before December 11th, they can take their name off. It won't be on the final ballot. And actually other people could get on the ballot. For the Democrats, there's only, I can read their names there, because only three of them, Clinton, Sanders, and O'Malley at this point. Again, other candidates could mystically appear. I just thought you ought to listen to, this was on the, there was a story from MichiganRadio.org about the ballot, but a commentator, you know, just anybody can leave a comment on any of these news websites, and I thought this was a pretty good one from a Renjopin. That's the name he uses, anyway. He says, once again, Democrats and Republicans have their quote-unquote private party selections subsidized by the taxpayers. Yes, that special primary in Michigan in March is paid for by your tax dollars. But all other parties, Rajopin mentions, are frozen out of the process. This is because, and he very accurately states this, there is a legal distinction made in Michigan that so-called major parties, quote-unquote, of which there are only two, of course, he says, get a free taxpayer-subsidized primary ballot, which helps, I'm adding, which helps to promote their name recognition for their campaign to come. Okay? So it's free advertising for all of them, not just those who win, but especially for those that win in the Republican Democratic Party. So so-called minor parties are relegated to party-run caucuses. They have to decide for themselves who is going to appear on the ballot next November. And Rajopan says, and again, very correctly, it's all part of the way the two major parties, so-called, keep their lock hold on the governing process. And, of course, they've made very, very sure that it's all completely legal, quote-unquote. Too bad, he says, because it's morally corrupt. That's his opinion. But I'm pretty close to stating that myself. Also, quickly here in our couple minutes remaining, go ahead, John.
Quick musical note, Jay. Next week, November 19th and November 21st, will be the premiere performance of the Metro Shores Chorale, which I'm a part of.
Oh, wow.
We'll be singing Thursday night at the Christ the King Southgate, Christ the King Lutheran Church in Southgate. And on Saturday, we'll be singing at Trinity Lutheran Church in Wyandotte on Oak Street. Okay. Nominal cost, $7 for seniors and students, and $10 for adults.
And you're a nonprofit group, of course.
We are a nonprofit group.
Chorale, out of, based in Grosse Ile?
Based on in Southgate.
Southgate, okay. Yep. Right. So John's booming, announcing voice will be used for music.
We will be singing with great, this is holiday music, and will be a sing-along as well.
Oh, my goodness. Well, it's great you have a radio show to promote it on.
There we go.
Yeah, okay. I wanted to promote sort of in a negative way, or positive way, I guess. There's a list in the News Herald for this week, which is the newspaper that has called themselves the voice of Downriver, because I think they're pretty much the only major paper downriver. Anyway, the story lists the stores, the nationally known stores, the big name stores that are going to be closed on Thanksgiving, making a big breaking a tradition of the last decade or two of being open on Thanksgiving, thereby, in fact, disrupting family get-togethers and gatherings of families so they can all go out at 2 a.m. or something and get a great deal and fight and push and shove. Anyway, here's the stores that are now saying, not on Thanksgiving. They can always wait till Black Friday, which is, of course, been a tradition for decades, the next night, the next day, or the next morning. But okay, it's Staples, GameStop, Costco, Nordstrom, TJ Maxx, Marshalls, Home Goods, Home Depot, Barnes & Noble, Pier 1 Imports, Joann Stores, Bed Bath & Beyond, Burlington Coat Factory, and Petco. The pets will have to wait for their food until Black Friday. Okay. So, but I think that's a good trend, at least on Thanksgiving, for Pete's sake. Which should be a time to give thanks, and I think a time for family, and I'm very, very supportive of that that trend.
Another timely musical note, 11:14 Saturday, this Saturday, the East River Folk Society at First Presbyterian Church on Oak Street in Wyandotte are having their open mic night. Very interesting night of anyone that wants to come up at a certain time, or it's after 7 o'clock at night. For a nominal fee, can perform what they like to perform.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Looks like that's it for today's show of the new WHFR Journal at WHFR.fm, the station making waves. Thank you for tuning in. And up next, Highway 61 with Kitty Love. So stay tuned for the best in the blues coming right up here. And please come on back next Friday for more of the new WHFR Journal. And take care out there. It's WHFR Dearborn. What did I do with the theme song? Uh-oh. Highway 61 theme song got lost, Kitty. Sorry. We'll get it. Hang on. I know where it's hiding. Okay. It's a computer thing. Can we back this up on paper? No, we can't. Okay, it's coming up. There we go. Okay.